Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host, and welcome you to the show. Today is Thursday, May the 29th, 2014. And happy anniversary, dear heart. Today is our 9th anniversary. And our calling number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and happy anniversary to you. We are in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, actually with Jesus' mom and dad celebrating our anniversary. And I think we're going to go out and play playtime. We're actually going to get some playtime. It's pretty cool. Anyway, we welcome you to the show. We're delighted that you're here. And one of the things that occurred to me as I was listening to the intro to the show is to once again acknowledge Mary Redonte, who's just this awesome young lady who came to a series of our workshops in Berkeley, California, about 4, maybe 5 years ago. And her first exposure to this work was on Sunday afternoon, and I believe it was Tuesday night she came in and said, I've written a song. She'd been there for Sunday and Monday and integrated so much of the thinking into this song. It was just awesome. And then she came in on Friday night and played it for us live, brought her guitar and played it for us, sang it. And just a matter of weeks later, had it put on a CD. So you might check out Mary Redonte. I think her website is maryredonte.com, Jim. So Mary Redonte, R-E-D-E-M-T-E. You can also go to our website and listen to her song directly. But the whole song, it's just awesome that what she integrated into the material. So thank you, Mary, for being in the world. And thank you for letting us use that awesome piece of music that you created, and it's just amazing to watch. You know, the number of people in the genius, when people get that I'm responsible for the output of my mind, and when people stop playing the blame game, that anything they're experiencing is somebody else's fault, that anything they object to, anything that their mind tells them they're disturbed by, you know, our definition in this work of denial is, when I talk about you or something you've done as the cause of something inside of me, you know, I need to run away from you, or I need to change you, or I need to fix you, or I need to do something to you. You're living in a lie. Get it. You're living in a lie whenever you say, you made me. That's called denial. Now, to break through that the barrier in the mind, to really, truly get that, you know, there's a great line in The Course in Miracles, and many people, they have to work with the Course for years to get past. One of the very early lessons in the Course, and the lesson says, I'm never upset for the reason I think. You know, when I do the Healing Through Relationships workshop, many of you have been there, I start out and I introduce my artwork, which is a flat line on the board with a hump over it and two small humps in the middle. And I ask people what it is, and people will say Kilroy, and people will say a Volkswagen, and people will say somebody peeking over a fence, and somebody will say a two-door igloo, and someone else will say a two-door train tunnel. And I point out to the person who would say two-door train tunnel, Well, let's imagine that I drew this on the board in the year 1500, and I presented it to everybody on the planet. Is there one person on the planet that would say this drawing is a two-door train tunnel? And in 1500, nobody had the brain cells, nobody had the content to call it a two-door train tunnel, therefore could not. So when one says two-door train tunnel, they're not talking about my drawing on the board. They're talking about the content of their mind. It takes great wisdom to recognize when you open your mouth and start to blabber about something that what you're blabbering about is the content of your own mind, especially when you're in objection, especially when you're in resistance, especially when you're in some form of hostility or fear, that you're telling us with your words about the content of your own mind. You're not telling us about the object of your attention that you think is the problem in your world and that you think you have to fight against or change or that you're accusing or you're making wrong. Just like two-door train tunnel, if you're saying it and you think you're saying it about your object of attention, you're really showing us the content of your own mind. And when you start to recognize that everybody's doing that all the time, and you really start to listen to your own words, because things you don't know about you, you're telling the world about all the time. Everything you object to, you're telling the world about the contents of your mind. Now, are there certain things that need to be objected to? Absolutely. There's some crazy stuff going on in the world. But if I open my mouth in some form of hostility or fear, that conversation's all about me. It's not about the object of attention. It's not about the lines on the board. And, you know, if you go back to Yeshua, if you really want to take these tools and you really want to put them to work, Yeshua says it so powerfully 2,000 years ago. He says, you've got to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. I think we can fairly safely assume that most everybody in his audience had what we call physical eyes and ears. So he obviously wasn't talking about that. He was saying, in order to think and to talk, to speak on another level than what humanity calls conversation, you have to build new brain cells. And the new brain cells you have to build in order to really truly comprehend what he was teaching and make use of it, the new brain cells you have to build are about how every word you say is a reflection of the content of your own mind. Every word you say in disturbance is your own carbon-based memory projecting its content into its brain's image and thinking the problems outside of it. So when you object, recognize that if there is any form of disturbance in your objection, anything I need to run away from this, then recognize that's your own content, and that's just more stuff to be healed. That's where the forgiveness process comes in. That's where we get to remove what never belonged. And so what we're here to do is to support you in removing, in number one, stopping your conversation about what's outside of you as though it could possibly disturb you, and recognize that everything that you're dealing with is inside of you. Everything I'm dealing with is inside of me. If I have disturbance, my mind says my disturbance is about that, I'm in a lie. My disturbance isn't about that. My disturbance is about the disturbed content of my own mind. And when I apply forgiveness to that, I get to remove that. And the word forgive does not mean I let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. The word forgive is how I change that content in my own mind. But I can't change it if I keep insisting that it's out there. No, it's you. That, look what you did. Look what they're doing. Look. Stop. Look inside. Remove your disturbance before you open your mouth. Maybe there's something out of place out there. You might be right. And if you are, and notice how the culture is in denial. The culture will say, I'm disturbed about that. Excuse me. You're not disturbed about that. You're disturbed. You are disturbed. And your own content is what disturbs you. So when I own that content, but I apply first century or make forgiveness to that content, I get to remove it. And then if there's something in the world that I need to address and speak about, I speak about it, but I speak about it in the context of love instead of out of my disturbance. So that's what we're here to support. And if you have not become acquainted yet with the forgiveness process, we would love for you to be successful in using it. That's why we do this show every day. And it's fun to do. We've been in 7 countries in the last 6 months. It's fun to keep up with this show, and we certainly, certainly appreciate Dr. Tim and Michelle for all the support they are in helping us to carry on when we can't be there. But it's certainly an interesting project to be available for the show. We've been, 3.5 years, and Monday's the first time we've ever replayed a show. It's an interesting project to do that. And we do that because we're committed. We want to support you. We want to be able to have a conversation with you about what's going on in your world and what's going on inside of you and support you in the process of healing. And that's why we do this. You can also go to our website, which is www.whyagain.org. And you'll see in the middle of the page a nice big bullseye. If you click that bullseye, will take you to a whole series of links. The series of links will give you Chapter 24 of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? It will give you a copy of the latest reality management worksheet. And then there are several radio shows. I'm not sure just how many we're up to now, 10 or 12, 13 now, radio shows. You can click on any one of them, and you'll be hearing a live show where we've in person walked somebody through the reality management process. So each of those shows will be a different set of instructions in understanding the nuances of the reality management worksheet. It's a really simple process. If you go, oh, that's too complicated for me, denial, and you're talking about the complications in your own mind. One of the things I point out in Why Is This Happening to Me Again is that to a complicated mind, truth is complicated. To a simplified mind, truth is simple. When you get the complexities out of your mind, you won't look at the worksheet and go, that's too complicated. You'll go, oh, this is really simple. Gee, I just fill in the set of blanks. What happened? How do I feel? What's my thought? What's my goal? Cancel my goal. Restore love. What's complicated about that? But the mind can bring all of its little upsets and disturbances, and the idea is to bring those up for you, and we're here to support you in healing. And Jeannie tells me that we have Peter Strino from way, way, way on the other side of the ocean. How are you, Peter?
I'm good.
In Sweden?
I'm good. Is it working this time?
Hey, I can hear you loud and clear. What's exciting in your world, Peter?
Say that again?
I say, what's exciting in your world?
The things unlike love.
You've got something unlike love up for you?
Not really, but exciting. If it happens, it's really exciting.
Oh, there you go.
And yes, it is happening. But five sheets a day keeps the doctor away, so that's what we're aiming for.
Now, that's a good phrase. We should start to use that. 5 sheets a day keep the doctor away.
You're welcome.
That's cool. So what's happening? How can we support you today, Peter? It's a delight to hear your voice. For those who are not familiar with Peter Strino, he's a young man who spent 2 years with his family at Heartland back about, how many years ago is that, Peter? 20s?
15.
Well, no, not quite.
15.
Your son, 15. Your son is now
17?
18. Wow. Young man. That's pretty awesome. I whenever I think of you guys, I think about how he would not let me go up to the board unless he was sitting on my arm, and I'd spent most of that intensive teaching with him on my arm, and how he'd grab the marker and go up to the board and start banging on it. That was so sweet.
Well, we actually looked through some photographs the other night. We were looking for something, don't remember what, but we found a whole stash of pictures from photos from our Heartland time. And it was pictures of me and or Tanya walking, and Elliot was there on our arm or doing something. And there were so many sweet pictures. So I said to Tanya, well, maybe we should make another baby and go to Heartland again.
There you go.
It didn't seem to take root.
Didn't go over too well?
No. Didn't seem so.
Well, it would be awesome if you would scan those pictures and send them to us, and we'll put them on the website.
Okay, I'll see what we can do.
How is Mama doing?
Mama is doing well. She just finished her master thesis 2 days ago, actually.
Oh, send our congratulations.
I will do. She's not at home now, but I will do. I'll do so.
And Peter, maybe you need to come back, you and Tanya and Elliot, and let him re-experience it now as an adult, where he experienced it as a little boy, and bring your other little baby. My mind just went totally blank.
Philip. Yep.
And let him experience it too.
I think that's an awesome idea, something that I've voiced, but we haven't gotten there yet. We'll see.
I understand. They become very much their own people and live their own lives quickly, don't they?
They sure do. They sure do. Well, on the note of how we experience things in our mind and things like that, I just flicked through on the telly last night, and there was this film. I don't know the English title, maybe My Fat Greek Vacation or something like that.
Oh, Richard, Big Fat Greek Wedding?
No, that's the second movie then that came out. It's not really good, but it's about the Greek vacation. There's this scene where American tourist on the bus, the travel guide is American / Greek, and the bus driver is Greek, and the bus driver is driving. And people and the Americans wanting to know the name of the bus driver, and he says something, and last name is, if I remember correctly, Poopy. And you can see all the Americans trying to just not starting to laugh, and then he calls for the travel guide and says, well, I have a nickname instead. And that's, what's that then? Oh, it's Kaka. And then when he says that, all the Americans just can't hold it together and so just start laughing out loud. And you see the travel guide with a troubled look, indignation almost, looking and leaning over to the bus driver saying, they're laughing at you. They're laughing at your name. And his response is, good, laughing is good. So I just thought it was so beautiful. Yeah, that was so beautiful that, he didn't have those brains, so that was something that was troublesome. So it was pretty beautiful. Well,
everybody's got a reality.
Yes. And I have one, and that is, I think this is the fourth time I'm asking, so I used to think I was kind of smart. I'm starting to wonder. But this...
good work, she.
Yeah, could be. I also heard you say in the introduction about whatever you say reflects the content of your mind. So, what am I going to say? Shall I be quiet?
Nah, come play with us.
I will. And I have to say that now, listen to the show every day, usually one day after, but still every day. It's really like I have all these new friends. I've never met them, but Tim, Rex, Michelle, and all of the people that are frequently there. And it's like, imagine yourself at the dinner table. Sometimes it's really nice to just sit quiet and listen, but then every now and again, you really want to say something. And now, 4 months of listening every day, there's so much that I want to say during these 4 months. But you can't...
You've got to live?
Yeah, unfortunately not. I have to start taking notes.
Well, here, Jeannie has something she wants to share with you.
There was one time when, this was not this past year, I don't think, it was 2 years ago, at the intensive, you know, how everybody, when they come online on the switchboard, and we always say, you know, what's your name and where are you calling from? And I use Julie from Ashland a lot because she calls a lot. And so I use that as an example because what happened was when we got to the intensive the first night, Michael has everybody to introduce themselves. And she says, well, hi, I'm Julie from Ashland, Oregon. And there were like two or three other people in the intensive that went, oh, I know you. I hear you on the radio all the time. And so they finally were able to put a face to hearing her name, and it was like greeting an old lost friend or something because everybody felt like they already knew her. So it's pretty awesome. It's good community.
Well, that's how it's starting to feel here, that I'm getting to know the people quite well, seemingly at least. Yes? So the question is,
are any of the folks that were at the last workshop series we did there a few months ago participating? Is there a support group happening? Or any of those folks listening to the show, or if you know?
I don't know. Remember, they were up in Stockholm, 7 hours away from here. I don't really know. I haven't heard. I was thinking about that because you didn't mention that or voiced that question and said, they might be doing what I'm doing, but I don't know.
Well, if you are, folks, we'd love to hear from you and or any of the other countries you've been in. We'd love to hear more often from you. So what are some of the things you'd like to share or questions you have, Peter? How can we support you today?
It's back to the 6C. I ask to be shown how I have violated number 3.
Right.
I keep, because I did a lot of worksheets and it seemed like I was just moving around and round and round in circles. And then all of a sudden I was really able to fill that part in, the 60, and it really opened up a lot of... Are you hearing what I'm saying?
Loud and clear.
It's making some strange noise here. So I really want to get that part, but it's often I'm not really able to fill that part in. And I don't know, most of my worksheet seems to be actually on Peter. And so then, like, the goal is... it sounds like you're trying to say something the whole time here. So the goals, for instance, one I'm looking at now, it's that everything should go quick, efficient, and turn out really well. And then I'm coming, that's the goal. And then going down to, I have to be shown how I have violated that goal.
Well, in that case, the idea of that step in the worksheet, Peter, is actually the whole worksheet. The idea is to get human life, to get this active presence of love and who we are with all our true attributes showing up in our own lives. So that step in particular I see as a pathway to compassion, because especially when I'm doing worksheets on other people and they should be perfect and they should have done this and they should have done that, but I start to see that I've violated that goal for myself or with others, then in seeing that I violated the very thing I'm demanding they be perfect about, that for me tends to bring in a certain level of compassion of, oh, geez, I'm doing the same thing. Maybe I need to stop pounding on them for what they're doing. And as I do that, I get to soften that part of my heart that holds some form of hostility or fear when someone else isn't perfect. And usually it will be a replication of the power person dynamic. When the power person, when we weren't perfect and the power person pounded us in a certain way, we'll have a tendency under stress to play out that exact same dynamic of pounding on someone else or pounding on ourselves. And, of course, when I see that I've done the same thing, then it tends to soften my heart and bring a little more of that compassion into the space. And Gene's got something to share as well about it.
right off the bat, Peter, I can't think of in your particular instance that you're using there, but like say a lot of my worksheets are, you know, that I want somebody to, you know, trust me or be honest with me or to appreciate me or something like that. And so when I get to the bottom at that part, it's not necessarily when have I not, you know, appreciated them or honored them, but it's when have I not appreciated me? When have I not appreciated or loved myself or honored myself or, you know, that I dissed myself, but yet I don't want anybody else to do that. And so I see it that way a lot of times. In your particular instance of wanting things to go quickly or efficiently, you know, maybe, you know, when have I procrastinated and not been efficient or quick, you know, or something like that, which will usually open up another worksheet.
Yeah.
And also, when I wasn't quick and efficient and didn't get things done perfectly, what did my power person do to me? And maybe my power person isn't around anymore. And if they're not, then very likely I'm continuing to do that thing to me that I detested when they did it. And so I'm just taking on being true to the role of the power person. And as I realize that and forgive it, then I get to be free of doing that to myself. So when you weren't quick and efficient and right on the track and didn't have everything perfect and, you know, weren't doing it just right in front of your power person, what did they do to you?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
When you say nothing, you mean they left?
Yeah, ignoring, I think you say.
Just ignoring you? Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you were ignored, what feelings came up for you?
Twofold, panic, sadness.
So if you look at your worksheet today, how often are you doing panic and sadness?
Often.
Often. So they probably relate to your power person. So some worksheets around your power person and wanting your power person to be there with you rather than ignore you might be productive in that regard.
I want them to like me.
Okay. So then I do that worksheet with that as a goal and then cancel the goal for them to like me. When I cancel that goal, I'm going to touch into that part of my mind that holds more of the energetic experience with them when I believed they didn't like me or I wasn't important to them.
Well, I'm laughing because that's the pit that I'm so totally in the moment, so.
No, it was shocking.
I got to that other part, which on the box to the side, I commit to having human life, to living as love, and you do a mass canceling.
Right.
It was so mass canceling when I wanted someone to like me. It's like I have to cancel every interaction with every person and situation in my whole life. So it's a lot of canceling going on.
That's a good thing.
Because it really feels that that is like in every interaction, the underlying goal is, and it's about survival, that like me, like me, like me.
Well, if you remember in the codependence to interdependence workshop, the dynamic there is we take on we come into the world as the active presence of love, this awesome presence of love, and we experience, literally, that experience means that every cell in our structure, and I mean all the trillions of cells in our structure, are just sparkling with the experience to be the presence of love. But when we start to, you know, because it is survival, our relationship with our power person is survival, and they start sending us messages of, you're not liked, you're not worthy, I'm going to ignore you because you don't deserve it, because you're wrong. You know, whatever the messages are that they sent, either with their words, their looks, the way they held or moved their breath, or the behaviors they did toward us or didn't do toward us, builds literally. It's like they're pouring, because we come out of the same genetics as they, and it's a dynamic that's been going on in the bloodline usually for a long time. It's like shooting for it. If the parent pours out this energy of hostility or rejection, whatever it is, because the child, because we as children had kind of the same tuning fork, the same resonance, we came out of the same genetics, we don't have much choice but to just, like the second tuning fork does when one is vibrated, it just sucks in all that energy. And then we tend to return that energy whenever anything stimulates it, thinking that it's actually the way we feel, when in fact it's just something that came from that power person dynamic. And the whole idea of the worksheet process, the whole idea of all of the tools, is to remove that, literally, that step in the worksheet that's down to number 6, just before the question of when I violated this goal, yeah. Where it says number 1C, is literally to remove that energy, that tuning fork, that whole capacity to even generate that from within me. And, you know, when we took that on and we took that on and we took that on, it's kind of like we started out as the active presence of love and then we fell from grace. We fell from that state into identification with this hostility and fear-based self that was built on the interaction and the dynamics with the power person. And then I can only guess. I'll just take this really wild, offhanded, uneducated guess and say that the moment when we did that, for most people, is the moment of the most intense rage one will ever experience. So I would expect, from what you've described, is that then every once in a while, what comes up is just that intense rage from that experience. And it usually happened when we were 2, 3, 4. And the rage, you know, that's one of the reasons why with kids they call the second year the terrible twos, because they've started to give up the direct experience of the active presence of love as who we are for this non-being self, and lost identification with who we truly are, and with that, the sparkle disappeared from the cells. I mean, literally trillions of cells, up until the moment where we fell into identification with that non-being self, trillions of cells were just dancing and singing, literally in this bathe, in this awesome active presence of love. Think about Elliot the first time you held him. That's how you and I started out. And then we took on all these messages from the power person. We replayed the genetic tuning fork of self-deprecation and not worthy, and we fell into that. And the rage attached to losing that direct experience of the active presence of love, I believe, is the root of all disease and disorder and disturbance throughout one's whole lifetime. And to revisit that and to forgive that, to remove that image, to remove those messages, to let go of the identification with the self that wasn't and isn't, is really the core of the whole work. And it's all based in the power person dynamics. And I think that's why Yeshua, you know, one of his major messages was, be as a little child. Go back to the truth of who you are when you are sparkling with the active presence of love in every cell. How do you do that? You remove from every cell the energy that you layered over top of that sparkle. The sparkle's still there. The awesome presence of love is still there. It hasn't been touched. by anything that's happened to you. It has not been touched by anything that you've ever done. Those things exist in different frequency levels. And so to forgive, and that's where Yeshua says, how many times do we have to do it? 77 times 70. Until I so weaken that genetic image, and it's usually something. If you went back and talked to your dad, your mom, I bet if you asked them about that issue, they'd go, oh, yeah, man, I had that with my parents. And if you ask their parents and their parents and their parents, it's a genetic anomaly that's been passed on to us, and it is a lifetime of work to totally undo it. Are you breathing with us? Are you there, Peter?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm breathing and I'm nodding.
What's happening with your breath?
I'm breathing.
Oh, okay.
Good.
So does that make sense of your question?
It does. It does. And somewhat to what Jeannie also was talking about, that even in that step, it's to treat, number one, being Peter, myself in this case, but to really down there as well, treating it as a third person. My non-being self. Yes. Okay, I have one other question.
I'll tell you what, before you go on to that question, the other question that I would ask is, have you ever seen the expression of this energy in either of your children?
Both.
So, one of the big reasons for really continuing to stick to and do your work, to let yourself soften and breathe in the presence of those painful dynamics and let them go, is to open the space, children and their children and their children, to be free of it.
Amen.
And it's also one of the reasons for teaching the tools to your children, so that they can join you in being free of it. Or, you know, if there's resistance to it, you know, perhaps the next time you see that expression happening with one of your children, and it brings something up for you, perhaps asking the child to hold the space and be there with you while you share going through your worksheet about what's happening for them and for yourself in that moment. And while they may not be interested in doing a worksheet, they oftentimes will respond to the call for them to hold the space and support you. And as they do, they'll get it. And as you help them to build the brain cells, they'll start to move the same energies as you are. And when you get multi-generations working on the issue, stuff moves so much faster.
Okay. Yeah, because that was a third question popping up. Then, because when you were here, we talked about that a little bit, about the issue between myself and Elliot. And so that was actually a question, how to go about working with that. But I hear that was the question. That was the answer. Thank you.
Awesome. Cool. And was there a question in between?
Yes, there was. Holding a space of love. So, like you've been saying, different people go to different places in order to get to that space of love. And I have my route. And, I mean, I've done that so many times. And then the other day, I just had this while doing a sheet and bringing, going into the space of love. No, actually, it was not doing a sheet. It was I was out doing something, and in the midst of the moment, I could just feel there was just so much pain coming up. And I was thinking, well, hold the space of love. So I went to the pictures, seeing Elliot the first time, what have you. And it was just that, is this a sort of avoidance? Because like you, when you do one part of the workshop, you go through different feelings, and the way you go to those feelings are via thoughts. So even though I had pain going up, I, with my thoughts, bring out those pictures, and by that generate love. And through that, the pain is not so much there, at least. So it's just a clarification of that, because it felt almost like as if I was avoiding it, skipping away from it.
I understand. So the difference would be, when I go to that active space of love, you remember in the workshops we talked about becoming the thinker apart from the thoughts, the feeler apart from the feelings, the actor apart from the actions. So when I'm moving to hold that space of love, I'm not looking to ignore and shift out of my pain or what's happening. I'm looking to develop the capacity to keep love active in me while that comes forward. So I'm not turning my attention away from my pain. I am purposely, consciously bringing the active presence of love into the presence of my pain. And as I do that, I develop another level of skill, and that is the ability to process myself. You remember we've defined processing as the capacity to keep love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up. Yep. And so I'm holding and allowing that which is less than love to move in me, but at the same time, I'm bringing forward this active presence of love. And ultimately, what will happen is the self, based in that which is less than love, will dissolve and disappear. If you go back to Yeshua, he says it this way. He says, in order for you to live, you've got to die. You know, it's like there are two, you've heard me use the example before of defining a word and asking an audience, if a word is a tool of communication indicative of an interaction between two, first of all, I ask people, does that make sense? Most people, yeah, words, there are two of us, there are two going on. And then you remember, I'll ask people, notice there are words running in your head right now that you're not speaking to anyone. If there are words running in your head that you're not speaking to anyone, and words are tools of communication indicative of an interaction between two, who's in there with you? Who's talking to who? So the non-being self has got a whole conversation going on, and you want to practice bringing, not turning away or pretending the non-being self is not there or ignoring it, but you want to practice bringing the active presence of love into the presence of the conversation of the non-being self. And that's what begins this dissolution. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's the practice. So I'm holding both together in the space at once. And, of course, the most difficult, it's a whole lot easier for me to process you than for me to process me. There's a whole other level of practice involved in being able to process ourselves. And ultimately, that's what the work is all about, and the intensives especially, is to support people in being able to hold love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up in them.
Yep.
Cool.
Cool indeed.
Anything else we can start to support you?
That'll be all, sir.
Cool. Well, maybe while you're listening to the shows, you want to start a notebook with questions, and then, once a month we could just do a whole show on questions from abroad.
Sure.
We appreciate you a lot. We think of you, we talk of you often, and wonder how you guys are doing very often. And we just appreciate you and care for you and cherish you in our lives.
Well, ditto.
All right. Blessings and love.
Same to you. Thank you all.
Okay, take care. Hug the babies for us and mama.
Okay, I will do. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Oh, it's so sweet to hear you again. That's cool. And so we kind of jumped in with Peter since we had him there and Skype was working, so we're delighted for that. And let's say hello to Dr. Tim and see how Dr. Tim is today.
I'm doing quite well, thank you. Delightful to hear Peter.
Yes.
And
yeah, we're going to have to get him back over here one of these days. He's been talking about it for a couple of years coming back to Heartland, but it'd be cool to get everybody in the community to connect with him.
Well, and that's a set of questions that we often get in the support group. So it's good to hear him ask it and get your input and Jeannie's input again.
And do you have any input in that regard?
What I usually tell people is when I'm asking to be shown how I have violated my goal in a worksheet, what I tell them is, I'm using that as an opportunity to ask for guidance from Ruka. I really like your, I hit it once, I think, in an explanation where you said, this is an opportunity to find compassion. Because if I can understand how I'm being really angry with somebody for doing something that I can't stop myself from doing, in that moment when I realize that, it's the compassion is automatic. So that's a really nice piece. I like that. And then what I usually tell them is that I'm just throwing it open to Ruka and asking for guidance. Anytime in the future, please point out to me different ways that I have violated the goal I have for this other person. And I often mix it. So one of the last ones I talked about was on Tuesday, and my goal for my ex-wife was for her to respect me and respect my feelings. And so then when I got to this 6C, I'm asking for help in showing out I have violated respecting myself and others. And so I'll blend respect for myself, respect for the others, honoring, following through for myself, following through for others. And sometimes that helps me formulate that loving goal at the end of step 7. But almost always, the thing that some people were surprised to hear me say is that in 6B, where I write down what it was I saw after I canceled my goal and asked to be shown the hidden part of my mind that was causing my pain, whatever it is that I see there is often the seeds of my next few worksheets. And as happened in the worksheet I was talking about on Tuesday, I realized the energy that caused me to pick up this worksheet that seemed to be anger was really about grief and sadness. And that's what I saw, and so there my next few worksheets are right there, that I have grief. And the thought is I failed my sons and my grief at the loss of the fantasy of the loving family. So there's two or three worksheets right there in 6B. And then in 6C, I said, I have to be shown how I'm, anytime, wake me up, give me a wake-up call if I'm in the middle of disrespecting myself or someone else. So that's how I talk about that.
Beautiful, beautiful. And you bring up a great point there with that hostility and anger. And that one's one that we can just deserves to be reinforced over and over and over again until we really begin to learn it. And that is, when I'm using hostility, it's like taking a drink of the fifth of scotch. Hostility is an internal drug that is always being used for an anesthetic. I'm never angry. That's that lesson from the course I mentioned. I'm never upset for the reason I think. And my hostility is always, always, always a drug I'm using to cover something else. And when I'm willing to let go of it, then I get to touch into and heal whatever that something else is. And each piece that's healed there brings in another aspect of our humanity. And, you know, to me, that's the whole purpose of the game is to restore human life with all of its attributes, compassion, You know, the Buddhist tradition, that their whole focus is restoring compassion. If you look at Yeshua, his major focus was restoring the active presence of love. And their attributes of our human beingness is really to restore that human life that is so precious, and to let go of identification with that false self that thinks that, oh, no, I've got to be a tough guy, I've got to be macho man, blah, 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 blah. And we destroy ourselves in doing that. So it's just the willingness to come back to the truth of being real, true men and women connected to the active presence of love and functioning as we are, as we were created to function out of that presence of love. And anybody that, you know, to me, anybody that would argue with that, I'd just say, well, go hold a newborn and then tell me that human life isn't about love. Just you know, give it a try. Hold a newborn. And there was actually a piece of writing. It's sort of been coming to mind. It's something I read years ago from a guy who was actually the dean of a law school, and he talked about how, you know, the sex drive was just something about survival. And, you know, that's all it's about. Just forget about the rest. Go have your pleasure kind of thing. And how somebody, and in his words, this guy was supposedly a teacher. In his words were, you know, somebody came along and made up this story about love. Like there's something dumb about that. And he's like, have you never held a newborn? Do you not know what it's really all about? And that when we behave from that active presence of love, especially in the bedroom, especially in that space of intimacy, that a whole new life flowers in ourselves, in our relationships, in our partners. It's just, you know, it's just a different game than the one that the insane, hostility and fear-based world is playing.
Well, the other thing that happened in our support group was somebody was saying, yeah, but this person really did this horrible thing. And that comes up every once in a while. As we're doing worksheets, sometimes people think, so I should just accept this and I should, you know, this person shouldn't have any consequences or... And we go through that over and over saying, yes, people do things that are hurtful, they're insulting, they're truly deceitful, they're, you know, intended to disrupt other people's lives, and none of that is good. We're not saying any of that is good. All we're saying is my internal response to those outside events is my choice. I'll have energy resonated, and I can't prevent something from getting resonated in me, but I can step back, feel what's being resonated, and choose to respond differently, choose what I want to focus on when that happens. And I can either choose to focus on my anger, or I can choose to focus on love. It's a choice, and both choices have consequences, and I need to choose wisely.
Well, on that point, I always go back, and you've heard me speak about him before. One of my mentors was a man named Judge Asad E. Kelly, and I like bringing him up on the show every once in a while just to keep his energy involved in this work. He was one of the motivators behind this work, and this man was a Superior Court judge in Albany, Georgia. And Albany, Georgia has been described as a part of the state of Georgia worse than the armpit of the state. And it's a pretty tough place. And Kelly sat on the bench, and he sent thousands of people to prison, many of them for life, for some of the most heinous crimes you could imagine. And yet, Kelly never punished one of them, never out of hostility spoke to someone in his courtroom. And someone who committed the most heinous crime would come before him, and he would express to them, I love you like a brother, and you've done something that's unacceptable in our community, and I love our community, and our community's taken up a collection. This is what he'd say. He says, our community's taken up a collection and built a building with a set of bars on it, and people who aren't safe in our community go behind bars, and they asked me to be the one who decides who's not safe in the community. So while I love you, while I am this space of love for you, I cannot allow you to be free in this community. I'm going to lock you up for the rest of your life. And then he would offer them laws of living, saying, if you'd like to heal, we can offer you the tools to heal while you're in that prison. He used to be, actually, for the state of Georgia. He was the head of prisons in the state of Georgia and then became a Superior Court judge. And, you know, he truly, truly was a space of healing and of love for some people in the state that were some of the worst, you know, if you think in terms of people who do heinous things, he was that space to support them. And if we could just get that throughout the prison system, you know, if we could shift out of this game that's being played on the planet today of law enforcement, you know, since it's all become about law enforcement, it used to be peace officers. If we could just train police instead of rushing in with their masks and their guns and their flak jackets and their weapons, if we could just train them in living as human beings instead of, you know, if you look at the spousal abuse, if you look at the alcohol levels in our police departments, they're horrendous because they're in the same state as the criminal mind in many cases. Not all of them. There's some wonderful people out there in that profession, but many of them are in such hostility and fear themselves, they couldn't fathom being a peace officer. But if we shifted the language back to and started to create peace officers instead of law enforcement, you know, the power of words, we'd have a whole different game going on. And so I just told him, in Judge Kelly's memory, he's now left his body behind, that perhaps his energy can be part of us shifting that on the planet. You know, in this country, since 9/11, there have been more Americans killed by police bullets than have been killed in Afghanistan. When you think about that, that's pretty bizarre. It's time for healing to happen in our country. So Jeannie tells me that we've got a caller. We're down to 2 minutes. So Susan? Hey, Susan, you're with us. Awesome. How are you, young lady?
I'm great. How are you? Nice to hear your voice.
Cool. Good to hear your voice. We love your accent. Your accent is so Southern, but it's so different from Jeannie's. You know, the fact that Jeannie's from New Jersey. We'll talk about that another day. But anyway, you've got something to share with us. I know we talked on Facebook the other day.
Yeah, I'm so excited that you're coming to Asheville, and I'm going to get to come up and do the Still Point Breathing on Saturday. Saturday the 7th.
Fabulous. You're not going to make it for Sunday for the Y workshop?
I'd like to make it for the whole week.
Okay.
You know, there's a possibility. There is a possibility that I'll go up this weekend, but I would have to come back, go to work, and then come back up for the following Saturday.
Cool. Well, that would be awesome if you could do that. We'd love to connect.
Well,
and
I'm going to bring as many as I can.
Saturday, Jeannie's actually got a class. She's doing the women's workshop up in Bristol, so she won't be there on Saturday for the breath workshop, but she will be there with me on Sunday for the Y workshop. So you're going to come over and maybe bring a carpool with you?
That's what I'm planning.
Awesome.
And Marianne is so sweet. She's given us all a place to stay. She said I could bring as many as I wanted.
How awesome
is that? I'm so excited, I'm putting the word out, and people are trying to get arrangements made. So we will see how many are able to come. But, you know, it is divine that you're coming. I am so grateful.
I'm delighted. And so anybody that's over there near Susan Darnell and wants a ride, you can connect with her, and maybe there'll be more than one car that will come over. In the meantime, we are, unfortunately, out of time, and so we'll have to close the show out. We'll just say thank you for being with us, and join us on Saturday, this Saturday in Asheville. Actually, Weaverville, just north of Asheville. Pardon me, Sunday afternoon, 1 to 5. And then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night, and Saturday, this is Still Point Breathing in Weaverville. So give the world the best gift you can. Give them the best year of your eternal life. Blessings.